Today is May 7th, 2009, and this is the Apple Weekly Report, episode number 148, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor for TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, copy editor. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/AWR. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at AWR.com. And, and Twitter. Twitter. Follow me on Twitter if you want. TMO Brian.
Right. And follow me on Twitter. J Gamet. That's J-G-A-M-E-T.
You know, does it ever seem to you like I've got to have some sort of stupid gag that I overuse?
I hadn't picked up on that. Those are endearing traits.
Yeah, I guess. You know, last year it was the fake guns.
Oh, you know, I could give you a phaser gun now.
That's true. We have phasers.
Yeah,
actually, we do have phasers. You know, speaking of phasers, by the way, we mentioned to our listeners last week that Star Trek, the original series, first episode in Blu-ray had arrived at my home. And since then, I've been in Star Trek heaven.
I'm sure you have been. And it's totally appropriate because this is opening weekend for the new Star Trek movie.
It is. I'm sure that's no small coincidence.
Wow. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. And as you said, the enhanced effect. So this repackaging of the series on Blu-ray includes both the original effects and then a bunch of quote-unquote enhanced effects that they've added to the show to replace some of the less-than-stellar 1960s quality effects. And it really is cool.
I have to agree. And I haven't had the pleasure or the luxury of being able to watch the remastered episodes on Blu-ray because, I'm like the peasants down in the mud having to watch the episodes there. I watched them on television. And even still, just on regular TV, they looked so much better. I mean, the colors were more vibrant, and a lot of the imperfections that they had in the original prints were gone, and the special effects actually looked really good. I thought it was great.
Yeah, why don't we link to the Amazon thing? We'll make it an affiliate link, so if people want to click through and buy it or look at it, we'll get credit for it.
I think that sounds like a great idea.
I'm also enjoying all the bonus material and commentary tracks. And what they're doing for these, where they have a commentary track, is they actually have people talking about they're talking much more about, you know, like how the effects went or how the digitizing process went. And we got some anecdotes from some of the people that did work on the show back in the day. So it's not like it's a normal commentary track where it's the director, the actors talking about what they did. It's much more about the people behind the scenes.
Oh, that's very cool.
It is very cool. And so, you know, they tell us like how they made decisions and, you know, and for instance, the music on this series was re-recorded from the original scores.
Yes, and you can tell.
You can tell. Yeah, it sounds great. It's clearly the exact same music note for note, but it's, you know, just so much better quality. But one of the things that they were talking about is when they rescanned the prints from the pilot episode, the second pilot, the Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Right.
They found like coffee stains on people's uniforms and stuff that came out, so that, you know, they had but they weren't concerned about it back then because they knew it wouldn't show up on the TV. And that's just fascinating to me, that sort of historical, you know, aspect to what they're doing. You know, just all kinds of messy things like that. Things that the producers back then knew that, you know, wouldn't show up on anybody's television screen, and so it just didn't matter, and they didn't even think about it.
You know, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about that, but it makes sense. They knew that they had limited quality, and so there was a lot that would be lost. That made their job easier.
Yep. And that might actually, I say that it was for Where No Man Has Gone Before. That actually might have been The Cage, which was the
original pilot.
Yeah, that was rejected by CBS.
Right. Just so you know, I'm sitting here with my iPhone in my hand on mute, and I'm shooting the phaser in the phaser app.
Mm-hmm. I figured you were.
Yeah.
Figured you are. Other good news, by the way, last night my band finally decided to make the commitment to record. We're going to record at the end of this month.
Oh, fantastic. I cannot wait to hear. And I'll do the gratuitous plug for you on that one. The Atomic Love Bombs, everyone. If you have a chance to go hear the Atomic Love Bombs, go do it. I have heard them because your band played at a club during Macworld Expo.
We did, and you were cool enough to come, and I appreciate your support.
Hey, it was very cool. I was glad to be there. Your band was fantastic.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks. And we'll include a link to the band in the show notes.
Oh, brilliant. You know, by the time we're done, we're going to have this list of all these awesome links, and there won't be anything about Apple in the show at all.
Well, maybe we should fix that. Maybe we should go ahead and get on to the news.
All right. I suppose we can do that, too. Apple's Lawsuit Express is picking up steam and SciStar is shoveling in the coal. The FTC is looking into Apple and Google's shared board of directors members, and Consumer Reports gave the MacBook top honors. AT&T might do the unheard of and lower iPhone contract prices. The rumor mill is full of Apple, EA, and Twitter deals, and a mystery powder cleared out one of Apple's buildings.
Apple's legal battle with SciStar over unauthorized Mac clones is still underway, and now Apple has asked the courts to compel SciStar to turn over financial records as part of discovery. Apple is also hoping to get someone other than SciStar CEO Rudy Pedriza, and you know this, you can't make this stuff up.
No, you can't.
They're trying to get someone other than Rudy Pedriza to testify during discovery, since so far he hasn't been able to answer even basic questions about the company he supposedly runs. Apparently, Mr. Pedriza failed in his efforts to answer some 90 questions about SciStar, including his company's financial operations. SciStar has agreed to offer up someone else that's more competent in that whole testifying thing, but it also contends that Apple's financial record requests are unreasonable because small companies can't keep as detailed records as big companies, you know, like Apple. SciStar is complaining that Apple isn't cooperating with this discovery request either, the implication being that if Apple isn't cooperating, SciStar shouldn't have to either. One attorney familiar with this type of case summed up the situation nicely when he told the Mac Observer, quote, "The bottom line is I think Judge Alsup will read SciStar the Riot Act by ordering the company to respond to Apple's discovery requests and will award Apple the cost of having to make another deposition," unquote.
Apple and Google fell under the watchful eye of the Federal Trade Commission for potentially violating antitrust laws because both companies share two board members. At issue is the role of longtime Apple board member Arthur Levinson, who also serves on Google's board of directors, and Eric Schmidt, who is CEO of Google and sits on both Apple's and Google's boards of directors. The FTC is investigating whether this violates the Clayton Antitrust Act of 1914, which prohibits people from serving on the boards of competing companies and requires that everyone wear funny hats and maintains a fancy mustache.
Say, that's a fancy mustache you have.
What? That's some act.
No kidding. Okay, and in any event, Apple and Google both make a free web browser, and both companies are in the mobile phone business, Apple with its iPhone and Google with its Android platform. The government's concern is that the two companies could collaborate to form an abusive monopoly. Now, if the FTC decides that there is an issue with Mr. Schmidt and Mr. Levinson's dual positions, the easy solution is for them to step down from either of the company's boards. Mr. Schmidt, however, has said he plans on remaining on Apple's board despite the investigation, and his legal team doesn't see any problems with that.
Consumer Reports put several brand-name laptops through the ringer this week, and Apple's laptop lineup came out with top marks. complete with proper enunciation and diction. The MacBook rated higher than any other laptop in the 13-inch category, and the MacBook Pro ranked first in the 14 to 16-inch, as well as the 17-inch categories. The laptops were rated on design, performance, versatility, battery life, and screen quality. The 15-inch MacBook Pro earned 75 out of 100 points, and the Toshiba Satellite came in a distant second at 64 points, full 11 points behind the Mac.
Oh, that's yeah. So
wow, that's
sad.
Pity. Yeah. Oh, that's pity. Why?
Wow.
Yeah. Consumer Reports also surveyed computer users on customer service experiences, and Apple beat out all of the competition there, too. Oh, they like that one.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that's great. We brought the audience back to the happy place.
Apple's desktop computers didn't fare quite as well, but they still performed respectably and respectfully. The iMac came in second behind Dell's XPS A1. God, that's a great name. And the Mac Mini earned a second place slot behind the HP Pavilion Slimline.
Sadly, there's probably PC marketing people out there taking notes and going, ooh, slime, that's a good one. Okay. There's a quote-unquote strong possibility that AT&T is planning a $10 price cut to the service plan required for an iPhone. And that's according to an industry analyst quoted at thestreet.com. Coat Collaborative analyst Michael Coat told the publication that the move is being considered for Apple's June iPhone update in order to broaden the market for the device. If Mr. Coat is correct, AT&T would lower the entry-level pricing plan for the iPhone from $69 a month to $59 a month. For the math impaired, that would lower the price of a two-year contract by $240, but even more significantly would greatly lower the barrier to entry that the current pricing plan imposes on would-be iPhone owners.
It's a new age in rumors, with Apple seemingly on the tip of every gossip whore's tongue from Silicon Valley to Taiwan, us included. This week, we have a couple of acquisition rumors in the form of Twitter, the social networking mini-blog service, and Electronic Arts, the mega gaming empire with roots in console, Windows, Mac, and more recently, iPhone gaming. Apple, which is sitting on enough cash to treat Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, and the late Howard Hughes to a luncheon that even they wouldn't soon forget, has often been the subject of such speculation as investors, analysts, pundits, and other people with too much time on their hands try to figure out just what the company could do with all that money. One such solution, apparently, would be to buy a social networking service that makes absolutely no money, doesn't have any revenue, and, well, doesn't really offer anything in the way of synergy between Apple, the electronics company, and it. Still, ValueWag reported Tuesday that Apple is deep into negotiations with Twitter to acquire it for about $700 million, give or take a bit. On the other side of the tech world, Guy Adami said on CNBC that there's quote-unquote chatter, which likely means two homeless dudes who just got finished huffing on a freshly scored used can of gold Krylon were overheard talking about it, if you know what I mean. That Apple wants to buy Electronic Arts, a giant gaming conglomerate that has recently been struggling. We'll talk more about that in the Context Machine.
I have the whole vision in my head. It's just not right.
Did you ever have to deal with huffers in your time as a policeman?
Yes, I did. And the great thing is when they say, I wasn't huffing, and there's a ring of gold right around their nose and mouth.
Did you ever get any hot Apple tips from them?
Oh, all the time. Yeah. They had the best investment tips ever.
I bet.
Yeah. Okay. Apple employees were evacuated from one of the company's Cupertino campus buildings on Wednesday after an envelope with a white powder inside was discovered. Now, initial tests show that the powder was not hazardous, but the Santa Clara County Sheriff's Department still plans to run additional tests, and that's according to the San Jose Mercury News.
You know, I'm personally convinced that that was just a little thank you gift from Larry Ellison to Steve that got misdirected. Just kidding, Larry. Don't have me killed, please.
You know, he probably could. He could just pull some money out of his wallet.
Yeah, probably could. I think he definitely could. All right, that sound means it's time for the Context Machine. That's where Jeff and I delve a little more deeply into the news to provide context for what's going on. You know, by the way, I can't imagine just how frightening it would be to get an envelope with white powder in it.
Yeah, I'm sure that everyone that was there was probably really kind of worried because you just don't know. And mm-hmm. And how sad is it that that's what things have come to?
Yeah, it is. It's very sad. It is indeed very sad. Well, also kind of sad, I think. I don't know, man. What do you make of these let's talk about Twitter first.
Okay.
So Apple's going to buy Twitter. Do you buy it?
No. I don't think Apple's going to buy Twitter. And but you know, I'll kind of make a stretch here and come up with I don't know how plausible of a scenario, but a scenario where it might make sense. And that would be
lay it on me.
Okay. So maybe Apple is looking at ways to expand their Mobile Me service and iChat. And so they're looking at a way that they can bring in the new hip instant messaging, meaning Twitter, into the fold and then weave that into the whole Mobile Me thing. And then maybe also use the coders that are already at Twitter to help the company develop a stronger base of web-based applications.
Okay, that's a reasonable hypothesis, and I appreciate your willingness to try to make it.
Why, thank you.
Try to make the case, I mean. Because, well, but, okay, before we look at that, I have precisely one scenario that really makes sense for Apple buying Twitter. And that's to keep Google or Microsoft from buying it first.
Okay, and that's actually more plausible than what I came up with.
Kind of, but Apple doesn't waste money like that. It's not really all that. I mean, it's really not any better than your effort.
Yeah, but it didn't take as long for yours.
Well, fair enough. It's I mean, Apple hasn't like okay, it is long been thought that one reason why Google bought YouTube was to keep Microsoft from getting it. And mm-hmm. And I actually buy that in part because, well, first of all, because they don't want Microsoft to get it. And second of all, because they actually can leverage it within their business.
Sure.
But, you know, they very much can basically, they've been able to monetize YouTube. I don't know if YouTube's making any money for them yet, but you know, they're probably going to make money on it far earlier than YouTube would have on its own or that Microsoft ever would have.
Yeah, well, all we have to do is look at Hotmail to see how Microsoft handles really cool companies after it acquires them.
Right. But, you know, that's just not the kind of thing that Apple normally does. It doesn't make a lot of sense for me. But, like, so your scenario, which kind of makes sense from the standpoint, it doesn't kind of make sense. It does make sense from the standpoint of if Apple were looking to add a service like that to Mobile Me, I kind of buy that reasoning. My problem with that premise is that were Apple to make Twitter part of a paid service, or if they were to make it, well, yeah, so if they were to make it something that only worked with Mobile Me, Twitter would lose everything that makes it Twitter. And, right. You know, it'd be kind of like, well, we'll talk about this in a second for Electronic Arts. You know, if they were to buy Electronic Arts and then maybe try to make them do everything for the Mac and iPhone, they'd, you know, very quickly take a multi-billion-dollar company and turn it into a multi-tens-of-million-dollar company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that doesn't make any sense at all from a managing. You know, that would result in just a massive shareholder suit.
Yeah, that would be a bad thing. All right. Now, but the Twitter thing, though, and keep in mind, I do not think Apple's going to buy Twitter. I really don't.
Yep, fair enough.
I'm just throwing out these ideas. So if Apple were to buy Twitter and roll it into the whole Mobile Me thing, mm-hmm. there's no reason why they would have to make that something that requires people to pay for it. And I present iChat as a perfect example of that because anyone can sign up for a Mobile Me account – and they get their iChat name, and they can keep that even if they don't if they don't go beyond the trial period.
Right.
So they've already shown that they will do that. So they could do the same thing with Twitter.
Yeah, they could, but what do they get out of it?
Snarky comments, 140 characters or less.
Maybe the branding, Mobile Me Twitter.
I guess. I don't know. I'm throwing these ideas out there, but really, I'm not seeing a really good reason for Apple to buy Twitter.
I don't either. I mean, you know, if they're going to do it, I also have no doubt that they see something that we don't. I mean, you know, because, you know, pretty much they've got, say, access to a lot more information than we do. So right. If they're going to buy it, they have a good reason for doing so. I can't see that good reason other than keeping anybody else from buying it.
Yeah. And, you know, and here I am saying Apple will not buy Twitter. I also said Apple will not let the iPhone be sold in Walmart.
Yeah, I said the same thing.
Yeah. So, you know, so we have a proven track record here.
Well, we're right far more often than wrong, but yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see. But so now let's look at Electronic Arts and yeah, I wrote a column about this week and you know, I don't really buy this rumor either, but I can construct some fairly plausible reasons why they might actually want to do it.
You know, the first reason that comes to mind for me is that they're going to bring back the Apple II, and they're going to kick off that as a gaming platform, starting with Electronic Arts. What was that basketball game? The Larry Bird and Michael Jordan.
Oh, man, you biffed your joke, dude.
I totally did. I was so on a roll, and then I forgot.
Oh, you were... Yeah, your timing was there, you know, bada boom, bada boom, bada boom. Oh, stumble, fail.
Oh, man. All right.
That's okay. We love you anyway.
I appreciate that. Because I was right there all the way up until it came time to say the name of the game.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, I couldn't remember it.
Fair enough. We'll try not to hold it against you.
I appreciate that. And so whoever actually remembers the name of the game, please feel free to email me or tweet it to me.
Hey, sweet. The Mac Observer is down.
Oh, cool. Again.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, so is iPod Observer. Go figure.
Huh.
All right. Well, I won't pull up my column then. So let's look at the Electronic Arts thing.
Okay.
Electronic Arts is, again, a multi-billion dollar company. What they basically do, they're basically a publishing umbrella that owns lots of different, not independent because they're owned by EA now, but they own basically different development houses.
Right.
And, you know, it's compartmentalized and segmented. You know, this company does that, and this company does that, and this company does that, and this brand does that, and this brand does this, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, most of their business these days comes from console gaming, from Xbox, PS, 3 and 2, whatever, games, from Wii games, from Nintendo DS games, from, I'm sure, probably other couple of other platforms out there. They also make Windows games, which used to be really big, but, you know, Windows and Mac gaming is smaller than it once was.
Right.
And they make some Mac games. Steve successfully brought them back into the Mac fold, and they've released basically a handful of titles in the last couple of years for the Mac.
And now they're doing iPhone games.
Probably making some good money at it. And as I said, my column... this is handy. I actually already had my column up.
Well, that's handy.
Yeah, it's sitting right there. But as I said in the column, you know, Apple, better than everybody else, knows exactly how many games are selling on the iPhone. And they probably have a really good idea of how many iPhones those games have sold for them.
That's a pretty safe bet, because they're not using the same accounting systems that SciStar is.
No, that's funny. So they may have found a compelling reason to own some of that development. But my problem with that idea is, you know, Apple does not have a good track record of buying companies and continuing to allow them to develop for other platforms, to wit, Logic and Shake, Final Cut Pro. They didn't buy Macromedia, but they did buy Final Cut Pro, and they made it a Mac-only app. Logic was a Linux, Windows, and Mac app, and is now a Mac app. Shake is now a Mac app.
Yes.
And Apple does not have a great culture for doing things like running independent software developers and allowing them to continue to do their own thing.
Yeah, that's
they don't
very
have any
true.
Kind of track record. They have no experience in it. They have no track record at that. So if they were to buy EA, I don't see how they could successfully allow EA to continue to market and develop or develop and market games for these other platforms. But if they don't do that, they turn again EA into a multi-billion-dollar company, from a multi-billion-dollar company into a multi-tens of million-dollar company.
And once again, we'll have shareholders up in arms.
Yeah, at the cost of, you know, roughly $6.9 billion to acquire the company.
Yeah, and that doesn't make sense.
It doesn't make sense. And maybe even if you look at iPhone games, maybe even multi-hundreds of millions, but it still wouldn't add up to what they're doing right now. So it's, you know, it's just kind of hard for me to it's kind of hard for me to buy that, especially with just, you know, there's chatter that this is happening. You know, whatever, man.
You know, I could see Apple, if they really were going into the gaming console market, which I don't think they are, I could see them striking a deal with a company like Electronic Arts to make sure that they have quality titles for their platform.
Yeah, absolutely. They could do that. Well, so then let's go into the other branch that I covered in the column, which was the fact that, you know, they've hired these ATI people.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I do not think, as we discussed, neither of us think that Apple is going to be making their own video cards.
Right.
Yeah. The that whole thing, you know, them acquiring the two former ATI guys, the other chip people are is almost undoubtedly all about the iPhone, the iPod Super Touch, and the iPod Touch.
Right. I have to agree with you there.
Right. So we talked about that again last week.
Right.
But if you look at the fact that they also poached this Teversham fellow from Microsoft's Xbox unit, maybe they are really thinking about having a major gaming platform with the iPod Super Touch, or perhaps even some you know, set-top device that's also based on iPhone OS.
I could see something like that happening. Yeah, but you know, it may also be that the skill set that Mr. Teversham has, while that's currently being applied or was being applied to the Xbox, would serve a better purpose somewhere else in Apple.
Yeah, so that's very true. That's even likely.
Yeah, so I mean, so just because he came from the Xbox team doesn't mean that Apple's planning on using him for gaming.
Very, very true, and I think that's a great point to be made. A very good point. So I don't know, man. I don't buy the EA thing. It could happen, but I don't think it will. I think that, as you said, it would be much easier for them to basically do what they did with Microsoft and just come to an agreement where you know, Microsoft was going to develop Mac apps for 5 years.
Right, and you know, and Microsoft has found, or at least enough people have found, that to be worthwhile, and so they've continued to develop apps for the Mac.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Mac apps,
that is a killer transition.
Yay!
That's awesome.
Let's talk about our sponsor this week, which is again our good friends at Smile on My Mac.
It is, and they make just a boatload of incredible applications. One of them being PageSender. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, is an application that I relied on for years and years, back when I was consulting even. So, you know, that kind of dates me. yeah, it's a fantastic faxing application for your Mac. And so if you're in a position where you really don't want to have a fax machine, but you still need to deal with the stone knife and bearskin world of faxes, this is totally the way to go.
Great Star Trek reference.
Thank you. It seemed totally appropriate today.
It did, yeah. So with PageSender, basically, you hook your Mac up to a phone line.
Right.
And you can use it to accept incoming faxes, and you can use it to generate and send out outgoing faxes.
Yes, and it works with like the email fax services. Mm. So if you want to do all this over the internet without even having to go out and buy a modem for your Mac, no problem. You can use eFax, EasyLink, or there's some others out there and it works.
JConnect.
Thank you. Yes. And it lets you do like PDF attachments. So if you already have documents ready to go, you can just drop them in line and away it goes.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah. And it's $39.95, but because all of you people are devoted and loving listeners, you get a 20% discount.
Yay!
Yes, and that runs through May 15th.
Right. They are running it through May 15th. Today is May 7th, so you've got 8 more days to take advantage of that. And if you go to the link that we have, it's smileonmymac.com/AWR. We have that link in the show notes.
Right.
You will find basically discounts for all of their products, which is really freaking cool. You know, they're good to us. They're really, really good to us.
They
make great apps, and we would like you to show them some respect and, you know, check out PDF Pen Pro, check out Disk Label, check out PDF Pen itself, Text Expander, Browse Back, and Page Sender. You can get all of them for 20% off. It's $31.96 for Page Sender. It's normally $39.95 through our link. And we think you should check it out. You can get a free demo too,
right? So you can try it out and make sure that I'm telling you the truth, and I am. They make killer apps, and they have helped my productivity so much over the years.
You know, it's really funny, not in a funny haha way, but in a cool way, that you use so many Smile on My Mac products before they ever sponsored us at the Mac Observer or our podcast.
Well, that's true. I was using Smile on My Mac products before I was even on board with Mac Observer.
Exactly. Exactly. So they're good people. Go check them out. And we thank them for sponsoring us.
We do. Tell them we sent you. Yeah, mention our name. You'll get a good seat.
Yeah. Speaking of good seats, this is not even a good segue at all. It's not even funny. I wanted to talk though about the FTC investigation.
Yes, and it's, you know, I found it interesting that this investigation is starting now, and didn't start like
years.
Yeah, why didn't this start years ago?
Well, you know, I don't want to get too political on anybody, but. It's kind of one of the points that I wanted to make, that this is one of the roles of the FTC.
Yeah, yes, it is.
And the FTC under the previous administration was a little bit lax on things like oversight.
Right. And also there's the fact that when all of these board members came together in the way that they are now, many of the things that have now caught the FTC's attention weren't in place back then.
True enough, but for 2 years now, these guys were both serving on both boards. Well, Arthur Levinson has been with Apple for a long time,
right.
Very long time. And Eric Schmidt joined in, I think it was June of 2006. It was definitely 2006. I think it was June. And, you know, the iPhone was released in 2007.
Right.
So, you know, it's been around for a while, but I'm thinking that not much is going to come of this investigation, but I think it's an important investigation for the FTC to conduct. I think that this is what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to keep companies from colluding. And I don't think that Apple and Google are colluding. If anything, they're competing viciously with the Android platform and the iPhone platform.
Right, right.
But I think that the FTC needs to make sure that everything is on the up and up, and you know, and if it's not, both companies should be spanked.
Yes, you're absolutely right, and of course, that's exactly what the point of the Clayton Antitrust Act from 1914 is.
Boy, man, I tell you, man, that act has got a good agent.
Yes, it does. Wow,
man,
we need to have them representing us.
Yeah, try it again.
The Clayton Antitrust Act of 1914.
Good agent, yeah. I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, that's good stuff. But anyway, what were you going to say about it?
It doesn't matter anymore. Actually, what I was going to say is that the Antitrust Act was pretty specific on what it says companies can and can't do. And
do they still enforce the fine hats and fancy mustache clause?
I believe they do. And I think that there are certain situations where they actually expect board executives to have the handlebar mustaches and twiddle the ends.
Well, they are failing on that because, quite frankly, there are no mustaches and no fine hats at all on at least anyone on Apple's board.
Well, that's true, but keep in mind that you did point out that the FTC has been lax over the past few years. So maybe we will start to see spats and fancy hats and fancy mustaches too.
It could be. Yeah, be that as it may, I guess the bottom line is that I think that this investigation is definitely appropriate. I don't think that anything's going to come out of it, but I believe it is their responsibility to determine whether or not there are any issues.
Yeah, and I'm certain that the legal teams from both companies did exhaustive research as they were coming up with these new products that could set off red flags with the FTC. So they knew they had all their bases covered.
Yeah, maybe. I've got a devil's advocate position on that, but we should note that Google CEO Eric Schmidt has said that he recuses himself from those portions of Apple board meetings where the iPhone is discussed.
Right. He runs out for coffee and donuts for everyone, right?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. And so basically there's no conflict of interest if he's doing that. Of course, you know, how good a job he can do as an Apple board director on the board without, you know, being involved in what is a big part of Apple's business. That's a whole other question.
Right.
But I think he probably brings enough other things to Apple that it's still worth it to them. But my devil's advocate position on whether or not they have all their ducks in a row is, if you remember, there was a big problem with Steve being on the Gap's board and the Gap chairman being on Apple's board.
Right. Yes, I do remember
because of governance. It was a different issue. It was not a competitive issue. It didn't have anything to do with that act.
I thought it had something to do with...
Don't mention it.
Okay.
Oh, you're going to mention what it does. Okay. All
right. No, I'll switch tracks here and not mention that, and instead mention I always assumed that the concern was over the fact that that the Gap sells jeans and Steve Jobs was wearing what, their brand?
No, I don't think he was wearing their brand. To be honest, I think he was wearing Levi's. But okay, that's funny. But what it actually had to do with is the fact that Steve was helping to decide how much of a bonus the Gap's guys were getting, and the Gap's chairman was helping to decide how much of a bonus Steve got.
Well, that was mighty nice of him.
So that's why Steve stepped down from the Gap's board. You know, and that's why they needed to do that. So, you know, that was a situation where someone had okayed that happening, and you know, and then there was kind of a bit of a kerfuffle about it, and they had to sort of change what they were doing.
A kerfuffle, you say?
Exactly.
Was it a regular kerfuffle or a right kerfuffle?
It was a right kerfuffle.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Yeah, so I don't know, man. You know, people do make mistakes, but in this case, I don't think there's going to be a problem.
Yeah, excuse me. I think I have a hairball. Wow. Yeah. I'm thinking that in the end, there won't be anything that comes out of this.
I agree. How about the AT&T price cut thing?
You know, I don't see it happening. However, I also didn't see the iPhone going into Walmart.
Yeah, we come back to that, don't we? I didn't see that either. I do see this particular price cut happening. And the reason why I see this particular price cut happening is because of issues of market penetration. I saw some numbers that said that that some 25% of AT&T's customers are already using iPhones. So, you know, where do they go? And the right. problem is that $70 a month, which is the starting plan for an iPhone, limits the number of people who can afford it or who want to afford it.
Right.
By lowering that by only $10 a month, that that substantially broadens the number of people who can afford it.
Yes, yes, it does.
And if they want to expand, you know, and even at $60 a month, that $59 mark, it's still a lot more than you know, the vast majority of AT&T's other customers are paying.
Yeah, that's true. But then again, if you add in the features that the iPhone users are getting onto those other plans, I believe you end up with fairly comparable prices. It's just that with the iPhone, the package deal means you have to pay for those whether you want them or not.
Right. But either way, it's still more of a monthly nut for AT&T.
Yes. So, you know, your logic totally makes sense and it's completely plausible, and the problem is it's logical, and AT&T isn't always known for taking a logical path.
True enough.
So that said, I think it would be great if this bit of information does pan out and turn out to be true, and they do lower that price plan. I'm not holding my breath for it.
Fair enough. This is one of the few times where we're actually at odds,
and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Always, but,
and I'm sorry about the tires on your car, dude.
Well, we're gonna have to see as we get going now. I noticed that Sir Harry Fleischman, one of our regular, longtime TMO members. He noted in the comments that he thought that maybe AT&T was concerned about the pre, and so they're trying to, you know, just trying to make sure that the iPhone remains competitive. Maybe. I think it has a lot more to do with being able to, like, you know, they basically sapped the upper ends of the market, and now they want to turn around and saturate another level down.
You know, I think that is a more plausible explanation than concern over the pre. And I think there will be a market for the pre, and I think that it will do okay. I'm not expecting it to be a blockbuster product.
I don't either. I think the pre and Android are going to be on equal footing.
Right. And what I think is going to happen is that you'll see a bunch of people that are using Treos today and some other people that just want to thumb their nose at Apple that are going to go with the pre. And then I think we'll see a lot of people that love being able to go under the hood and get into all the tech stuff that goes along with their technology. And I think those people are really going to embrace Android. And then we'll have the rest of the market that's more interested in what the iPhone has to offer.
Right. And you can add, by the way, and I think you're kind of including these people in your list, but I think that Palm may be able to get some customers from BlackBerry. People, again, who, you know, they don't like Apple. They don't want to be part of the Apple culture. But they want a phone that's a little bit less stodgy than a BlackBerry.
Right. Yes, that makes sense. And from what I've seen leaked out onto the internet, it looks to me like, if nothing else, the web browsing experience that you're going to have on the Palm Pre will be better than what you get on the BlackBerry.
Well, do you think it'll be better than you get on the iPhone?
No, I don't.
Why?
Because Apple has a proven track record of being able to make better, more usable user interfaces. And I think that Palm will do a good job at creating a usable interface, but I don't think that they're going to be able to pull off that same level of quality that you get from Apple software.
A lot of ex-Apple people at Palm.
There are.
Including who's the main guy?
Oh, what's his name? That used to be on the iPod team.
Not Tony Fadell.
No.
No, higher up than Tony. It's higher up than Tony. Who is it? Apple exec. We're Googling live here for you folks. Palm.
That's right, because we have to interwebs.
We have to interwebs, yes. Maybe can't get to our site, but, you know, that Google site's working. And hopefully, you know, if you guys are lucky, we will have edited out some of this hemming and hawing.
That's I'm assuming that there will be at least a second or two that's been edited out.
Yeah, probably. Paul Mercer? No, Paul Mercer's not who I'm talking about. Is it Robert or Ron?
Robert sounds right. But I'm not sure.
All right, so I'm seeing here in March of 2007, I'm seeing that Palm hired a software engineer from Apple named Par Mercer, who started a company called Pixo.
Okay.
All right, so there's those guys, but then I know there's another executive, Palm Poaches. Oh yeah, they got Lynn Fox from Apple PR.
Oh okay. Well, I guess now right. I know where Lynn ended up.
Yeah, Lynn's over there. Rubenstein, yeah. Frickin' John
there
Rubenstein.
There we go. That's the name I was trying to remember.
Yeah, he's a stud. He is a real, real stud. I mean, that guy really knows what he's doing.
And
I think he's one of the big reasons why Tim Cook was, you know, threatening to sue anyone that poaches on Apple's intellectual property.
All right, I just want to throw a product name out at you.
Mm-hmm.
Palmfolio? Yes, the folio.
Yeah.
Rubenstein was behind that.
Right.
And that is Palm's Lisa. And there has to be a pit out somewhere, and I'm betting it's in the same mysterious place that the Lisa pit is, where all of them ended up.
Yeah, fair enough.
So, you know, just keep the folio in mind.
Right. Okay, so that is a very fair point, but the fact does remain that there are lots of ex-Apple people that Palm, not lots, but at least some, that Apple have poached away. So, you know, that said, I agree with you. I don't really think they can beat Apple in the user interface department.
Right. And now that I've waxed poetic about how Apple totally has everyone beat on the user experience with the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to just bitch and say, you know, for as great as the apps on the iPhone are, mm-hmm. why can't they make a web browser that doesn't crash as often as it does on the iPhone? And why can't they make mail more robust?
Agreed on both accounts.
Yeah. Two applications I rely on throughout the day, every single day, and they both crash on me, and I get sluggish performance out of mail, and okay, so I'll just step off my little bitching soapbox right now and call that one good so we can move on.
Fair enough. Let's counter it and close out the show then with our iPhone app picks of the week.
Oh, I think that sounds good. Yeah. All right, so I'll start with mine, and mine this week is Easy Wi-Fi for AT&T. Mm-hmm. This is a 99-cent application that takes that arduous process out of the mix that you have to go through when you want to connect to an AT&T Wi-Fi hotspot, so like at a Starbucks. So instead of having to fire up your web browser, put in your iPhone's phone number, click the agree button, then click the connect button, and then wait for a text message to come in, click the text message, and then surf the web. You just launch this application, and it automates the entire process, and it takes a couple seconds, and you're online and done.
I like that.
And it's only 99 cents.
That's very cool.
Yes.
It's very cool. Almost sounds like something our friends at Nova Media would do.
You know, yeah, this is exactly the sort of thing that the Nova Media people would do. It just so happens someone else did it. But yeah, this is totally up their alley.
Yeah, Nova Media rocks, by the way.
They do.
There's some wacky, crazy German coding guys over there.
And they are lots of fun to hang with.
They are. All right. My quick app of the week would be Lose It. This is an app, you know, for anyone who knows me, I am a little bit on the big side. Lose It is a cool little application that basically just allows you to track your caloric intake by, you know, you enter your meals and it tells you how many calories you've consumed. So, you know, it's only as honest as the information that's going into it. It also does a little thing where it asks you what you weigh and how much you want to weigh, or how much you want to weigh and how many pounds a week you want to lose. And it'll tell you how many calories you can consume and meet that goal.
Wait.
So it's got a lot of foods that are already in it. There's like a whole ton of foods, including brand name stuff and basic staples. So it's pretty easy to use. You can set up meals so that, you know, you don't always have to put everything together. And it's, I don't know, it's just really cool. I found it very useful.
Okay, that's very cool. And I can see where that would be wonderfully handy, especially if you are trying to watch what you're eating. But I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. You said you're kind of big.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
No, you're just cuddly.
No, right. Thanks, man. I know, by the way, there's a user review of this app on iTunes that says that they sell your info. I don't know how true that is. I don't know anything about that, but it bears mentioning. You might want to actually read through the reviews and see what people are saying.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always good to check up on applications before you just start installing anything on your iPhone or your computer for that matter, because you never know.
Balderdash! Oh, wait, no, you're right.
I loved that game. Hey, wasn't that an EA game also?
Maybe. I didn't know there was a game called Balderdash. I was just using it as an expletive.
You just weren't a hardcore gamer back in the Apple II days, were you?
I was not.
I did not
own an Apple II. I used an Apple II in high school back in the early 80s.
I had a Franklin Ace 1000.
Oh, you were cool.
Oh, I was cool.
You were cool. Don't tell Steve. He might hit you.
He might.
All right, take us out, man.
All right. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, send your audio or text comments to awr@macobserver.com. And remember, succinctness is next to Steve Linus. And that's this week's Apple Weekly Report. Thanks for listening, and thanks for sending us your comments and feedback. And always feel free to follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/jgamut.
And you can follow me at twitter.com/TMOBrian. That's Brian with a Y. Archon is content. Archon. Freudian slip there. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boone, recorded for TMO. And an extra special thanks to Kevin, there can be only one, McLeod, for the piano music we used in the news. That's all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer and iPodObserver.com.